And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Doing well, Jordan. It amazes me every year. Here we are, the calendar's flipped to March as we sit here recording this on this beautiful day, and it's like the off season is already here. We go straight from the Super Bowl. We get to catch our breath for about 2 weeks, and then we are right into it. We are on the verge of free agency. We didn't have the combine. I thought about that. How many times, Jordan, did you think about that over the last few days? How we weren't in chilly Indianapolis stalking the hallways of the convention center. It really always kind of felt like the kickoff to the off season, and we didn't get that this year.
Yeah, it was really weird. I will say my long-term physical and mental health probably appreciates it, but in terms of the short-term information gathering, it's really it feels really weird because I'm looking at my calendar and I'm flipping over, you know, two pages in my little weekly planner. And yes, I still use a paper weekly planner. Roast me if you must. Wow. And so
Is that what you use to call people on your rotary phone?
My Rolodex. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got my phone numbers and my information. Yeah. No, I like flipped over one page and I was like, holy crap, free agency starts. The negotiating window opens so soon. And obviously, you know, we want to touch on that today. But speaking of just sort of blockbuster news opening various weekly windows, I mean, obviously the Rams experienced this right out of the gate in January when the Rams agreed to trade terms with Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions. But elsewhere in the NFC West, things are getting heated and crazy, and starting last week with Seattle, our incredible colleagues Michael Sean Dugar, Mike Sando, and Jason Jenks had a piece about the spring of Russell Wilson's discontent, and so that's a great read if people haven't checked that out. So that's a situation to monitor the NFC West. Something that might motivate Russell Wilson to continue to push for change within his own personnel in terms of the organization. J.J. Watt joining the Arizona Cardinals. So now, obviously, this is a division that features some of the storied and premier pass rushers in the NFL. Chandler Jones, Nick Bosa, J.J. Watt. Certainly not least among them being three-time Defensive Player of the Year Aaron Donald. I mean, Rich, what do you think about this? This is crazy, right?
I was shocked. And for people who maybe, you know, don't know, he was able to do this because of the way that he left Houston. He doesn't have to wait until mid-March like everybody else. He was a free agent class of one, or at least a high-level free agent class of one. So he was able to do that in the 2 weeks here before you can even start that negotiation period. Wow, when I saw it, that was my first thought too. Like, the NFC West just stepped up again. And we know how difficult it was last year. And we know that Arizona was a team that started strong, looked like it was going to be a contender for a playoff spot, for a division title even. Faded a little bit in the latter part of the season, which is not unexpected for a young team. But they made a statement here. We all know what they can do on offense and with Kyler Murray and with a, you know, great offense in mind and Cliff Kingsbury. And now they're making a big statement, bringing in a veteran guy like J.J. Watt. We've seen what that can do, not just on the field, but this is a guy who's obviously had amazing success as a player. He's going to come in and be a good leader and help the guys who are on that defense to play better and to play with a certain attitude. So, my goodness. I mean, we talk about these offenses that are in the NFC West, but you can't ignore some of these defenses either. We don't know what the 49ers are going to look like. Obviously, they're undergoing a transition there with a defense that gave the Rams a lot of problems over the last couple of years. Seattle, like you said, what a fact. Absolutely, people need to go read that story. I mean, the stuff that's going on there in Seattle with Pete Carroll and kind of some of the scrutiny that maybe he's coming under after kind of, you know, running the show. He had been the guy in Seattle for a long time. And I think people maybe are starting to question that now a little bit, and whether, you know, how much autonomy he should have. So fascinating division. And I don't think it's going to get any less interesting as we go along here. But yeah, you can't sleep on the Arizona Cardinals now, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because obviously there's still complexity ahead with free agency, with the cap shrinking to what it will be somewhere in the 180s, low 180s range. And that, of course, in turn limits what teams are going to be able to do, probably increases cap casualty cuts across the league over the next week and a half or so, probably increases, you know, the array of tough decisions that you have to make in terms of selecting your free agents. But what I really think is in Arizona, I think it means, you know, you're probably going to re-sign Chandler Jones. And because he'd been coming off the injury, I know that among our staffers, he was listed as a potential cap casualty. But you also have Hassan Reddick, who you may not be able to re-sign at this point. You have, you know, there's a balance now that teams have to walk sort of more delicately. It's not just the Rams. I know everyone makes a fuss about where the Rams situation, and Rich and I outlined that several times, and I outlined it again in my off-season mailbag, which you guys asked me a ton of great questions, so go check that out. But it really is like such a delicate line for people to walk in terms of who they retain and who they don't. Basically, though, you're seeing that strategy of almost, I want to say, imitating in a way what the Rams have been able to do in terms of your guy who you might put on the inside. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they move J.J. Watt to the inside and have him acquire double teams and free up whoever is on the edge. And that sounds super familiar, I think, to Rams fans who are listening to this. But also, he's a guy who can rotate and move up and down the line. So you kind of are drawing a double wherever you go. I mean, he's also a three-time defensive player of the year. And I know his stats weren't great last year, but you look at some of his pass rush efficiency numbers and all of that, and you can't rule him out as someone who is an added benefit for everybody else along the line. And getting a player like that can do a lot of things for your defense. Now, do I think the Cardinals are close in terms of having all of the pieces to make a run? No. But also, I mean, it's going to be interesting and fun to watch anyway, because, you know, J.J. Watt, he went and he got some great guaranteed money. He controlled his own destiny. He broke his own news. And I think when you see players taking some of their empowerment and players who are taking control of their futures and their destinies, like you're seeing across the league more and more often, and you will probably see that particularly as the craziest offseason sort of commences, and particularly perhaps at quarterback. I think that, and you know, you even hear about like Matthew Stafford pushing really hard for this Rams trade and being a key factor in why it was able to come together so quickly. To me, if I'm looking at it from sort of an unbiased perspective, yes, the NFC West is always for, you know, the next many years, especially as these coaches, if some of these coaches, some of them, not all of them, stay in place the way that they are and continue to, you know, develop this talent and have this talent on their roster. The NFC West is always going to be so highly competitive. So it's not like, it's not to me about chasing a ring for him, or he got the good paycheck. He's in a great climate. He's with his teammates that he likes, his friends. DeAndre Hopkins is a good friend of his. Chandler Jones is a good friend of his. And he took control of his own future. And I think I as a person and as a sort of from an unbiased perspective, I like to see that. I like to see players take control of their future. I would like to see Deshaun Watson take control of his future as he is doing so in terms of, you know, forcing the issue in Houston, which sounds like a very toxic place to be. But, you know, I think that, you know, on a maybe a more macro level, I think that's really interesting. Now, of course, it becomes a huge challenge if you're the Rams. You need to already be restocking along your offensive line if you're the Rams. I think that not only looking for options in free agency in that regard, but continuing to draft at your higher ranked pick points, I think, especially in this year's draft where interior offensive linemen are going to be available in the second round and they could be starters for you, I think that that's something important, especially as people are starting to, you know, really stock up, especially on some of those defensive players, those high caliber players. And you know that pass rushing talent in the league is not going to diminish anytime soon, and especially not in the NFC West.
Yeah, for sure. It's the power plays here are amazing. And I liked what you said, especially Jordan, about players kind of taking control a little bit. It's starting to almost get that NBA feel a little bit, where guys, especially when they get to a certain point in their career, or maybe they've hit a crossroads, or they're not totally pleased with the situation, sometimes for very, very reasonable reasons, start to look around and go, okay, well, where can I maximize myself a little bit? Where can I fit? Where do I have the best chance to win a ring? What's the best situation for this year, which might not be the best situation for the following year? But I think it's great. I think it probably gives a lot of GMs headaches and player personnel people headaches, or coaches and things like that. But from a watcher's perspective, a fan's perspective, I think it makes it really compelling that these teams can undergo some changes like this, that you see these big names moving the way that they are. And we don't know what's going to happen, like you said, with Watson. All of a sudden, it's not ridiculous to think that Russell Wilson might be moving on from Seattle, which who would have ever thought that would have happened? So it makes these off seasons, you know, all the more interesting to watch, and these teams can just change themselves, transform themselves so quickly. So I'm really fascinated to see what goes on here, especially over the next couple weeks, maybe over the next month as we get into free agency.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
But Jordan, I think we should probably address the big changes for the Rams since we last talked. Have not been related to the player roster, but they have been on the coaching roster, I guess you could say. And we finally, after a lot of wait, got the full list of new coaches and some position changes. People, I'm sure, have read all of your great coverage, so we don't need to detail every single coach who's coming in or every single change that was made. But there was a big one, Jordan, and that is Aaron Kromer departing as the offensive line coach. He had been in place since Sean McVay came in 2017 and really did a fantastic job, not only in transforming that line immediately and turning it from one of the worst offensive lines to one of the best offensive lines. There'd been some ups and downs over the last couple of years. I think that a lot of that had to do with personnel more than coaching necessarily, but he is moving on by mutual decision. So Jordan, and by the way, you covered this very well in your Rams mailbag that just went live on the Athletic app and the website That is chock full of great information, not only about these coaching moves, but about all the things going on with the Rams. So I'd encourage everybody to go check that out. Well, not right now. After you finish the podcast, then go check it out. But Jordan, what do we know about Aaron Kromer? And the Rams have already made a hire, a replacement here. So what do you anticipate kind of the change meaning here for the Rams on the O-line?
Yeah, so this was a really interesting situation because if you are determined to, quote unquote, mutually part ways, or if you are determined to move on from somebody, from circumstances within a season, you do that right away. It's like Sean McVay moves quickly. You see this with some of the hires that he had honed in on. You see this even with the Wade Phillips situation where the decision to move on and then sort of the findings of he's interviewing with Brandon Staley very quickly after the fact. And these things happen quickly after the season. If it's usually a season or performance related mutual parting, or if it is a performance and season related firing. Now, this was obviously described as a team spokesman as a mutual parting. So, like, what that means really is that it didn't ultimately end contentiously. And I think that's something that people, right. That's a question I got a lot was it was not characterized to me as a contentious parting. Obviously, when the conversation is broached, like, you know, hey, I'm going to move on from you, that's probably not the greatest thing to hear. So, but right. Importantly, like, it doesn't end contentiously in terms of how it was described to me. So here's the kind of complex part of it. So the sense that I got from speaking to a couple of team sources. And again, note that as well, because there are obviously multiple perspectives to a situation like this, but the perspective right. that I was able to gather is from team sources. So the sense was that it was kind of time to split the sort of father-son situation, that dynamic along an offensive staff. And obviously Aaron Kromer's son, Zach Kromer, is an offensive assistant for the Rams. He has a different title now. He entered the season as offensive quality control. He has a little bit of a different title as an offensive assistant. It wasn't really a promotion or anything like that. And obviously the Rams were, Sean McVay was out there interviewing candidates for the assistant offensive line coach, and that was external. And also external candidate Kevin Carberry comes in and is the offensive line coach now as Aaron Kromer's replacement. So it was kind of a sense where it was like time to split up the dynamic in that regard. And, you know, sometimes it can work when you've got a father-son duo and sort of that factor within a staff, particularly as, you know, you're kind of on the set, you know, there's like the coaches do this all the time. Coaches will hire their sons or their nephews and honestly, in my opinion, that's a huge issue and a barrier to many people not receiving deserving opportunities across the league is people hiring who they know, who they're comfortable with, who's in their family. And so my sense was that it was time to sort of disrupt that particular dynamic. And you've seen Sean set a precedent with this before. In terms of Wade Phillips and Wes Phillips. And so that's a change that there is precedent for. And so then there also twofold is now more opportunity for Zach Kromer to grow upward internally because, you know, it's not like my dad's promoting me at that point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you've seen it. I mean, Bill Johnson, the Rams' former defensive line coach, his son was on the staff also when he got fired. So this is like a third time that this has happened. I take that back because Aaron Kromer didn't get fired. It was mutual. But yeah, there is a certain dynamic there that, yeah, it's maybe in the end it's mutual, but nobody – Nobody is in a good, you know, think of it as being in a relationship or something. You don't, even if a breakup is mutual, it starts for some reason, right? I mean, it's not, you don't just you aren't just going along your day-to-day lives and then just sit there one day and go, you know what? We mutually just decided that we shouldn't be together anymore. Like there has to be some kind of spark or some type of negative activity that causes that. So I just wanted to make it clear because, you know, people in the absence of information, there's speculation. And right. And people were speculating right away, like, well, you know, the Rams offensive line wasn't playing quite as well. No. This was not a move like this does not happen a month after the season ends where it is performance related. Those decisions are made immediately after the season. We see them all over the place where you're not satisfied with your coordinator or with your position coach. So it's time to make a move. You don't sit there for a month and stew over it. And then make a move. So I just wanted to make that clear that didn't have anything to do with performance or things like that. Whatever was going on behind the scenes, like you said, Jordan, it's complex. You know, only the people who were there, who were involved in it, really know the details. I think you did a great job of kind of filling in some of the blanks there and setting the parameters of it. But yeah, in the end, it looks like that Sean McVay and Aaron Kromer decided that this was the right move for each of them. Maybe they didn't get there in the same. Maybe they didn't take the same path to get to that conclusion. But they both reached that conclusion. So you hope it works out. No worries about Aaron Kromer, as you said, Jordan. I'm actually surprised he hasn't been hired yet. I'm certain he will catch on someplace as a very talented offensive line coach. And then Kevin Carberry comes in, and what do we know about him?
Yeah, so Kevin Carberry is a former offensive line coach at Stanford, which I find intriguing in a lot of different ways, not the least because of how, you know, year after year after year, you hear scouts and front office people and especially personnel and talent evaluators talk about how pro-ready Stanford's offensive linemen are, how their scheme under David Shaw and most recently Kevin Carberry is so physical and can do a variety of different complicated blocking concepts and schematic concepts that a lot of times, especially now with everything so gravitated towards spread offenses and whatnot, you're not seeing as many pro-ready offensive linemen year over year. Well, that's not really ever been an issue when you hear those scouts and personnel people talk about how ready some of these guys are and how you know, physical and just sort of able that place is schematically in terms of what they do in the run game. So right. Kevin Carberry, my understanding is that he's going to be working closely with Thomas Brown. Thomas Brown obviously is a running backs coach and now the assistant head coach, which I think was a fabulous, fabulous move for McVay to promote him into that role. They're going to be coordinating the run game together. Obviously, Kevin O'Connell, who will stay in his role because, as McVay finally confirmed, I had reported back in, I think it was, January, that Sean blocked Kevin O'Connell from interviewing for the Chargers job. So he's like, oh, yeah, I did that recently. So. those three will be coordinating the run game. I think it's really exciting moving forward in terms of the possibility there, especially with Thomas Brown having more of an autonomous role, Cam Akers being developed more in his second year. And I think Kevin O'Connell growing in some of his responsibilities as well, though probably will still continue to take the lead in quarterback coaching duties as well. And I do think that there's one facet of this where there are a lot of interesting sort of notes as Sean McVay has continued to develop and hire in terms of his staff changes. I think he's probably had more hires to make in the last couple of years than most coaches around the league. Right. And the strategy with which he's approached that is very external based. And so for me, I think that there's interesting facets of you know your understanding of the league and your growth as maybe a person and as a coach when you start to make different decisions. And one of them is using that block button a little bit more, I think, is one of those things. If you want to keep a guy around, do what you can to keep him around. And then I think there's still interest to me in I'm of the personal opinion that you want to develop young coaches internally. You want to develop young, promising coaches internally and keep them around as long as you can and promote them into the right roles. Now, that doesn't mean that him hiring Raheem Morris was the wrong decision. Raheem Morris is a hell of a football coach and a hell of a person and is an absolute dynamite hire for this football team. But there also is the sense of, you know, the pattern that Sean McVay has showed over the last couple of years is that his coordinators particularly are usually going to be external hires. His sort of higher ranking assistants and ultimately, you know, Thomas Brown coming into that role, Kevin O'Connell, those higher ranking assistants are probably at one point external and then sort of get promoted into other roles or people who Sean McVay has had a long time relationship with. And so the balance there that's struck between, you know, you have to at least get your guys through these interview processes because you want them to feel valued and show they're valued. At a certain point, there are no more titles to add to somebody's job. Like there's, right. You can't promote anyone any higher. Where I do think there's a little bit of growth is shown is understanding that sort of intra staff nepotism is often something that could bite you in the ass. And you yeah. see it in Seattle right now with yeah. our Michael Sean Dugar had this very illuminating piece before this sort of massive Russell Wilson piece that they had where Pete Carroll obviously has his sons on staff and he believes that they're the only one, like he listens to them. He hears them. They're allowed to criticize him and he says he listens to them. And Michael Sean asked Pete Carroll, Who do you answer to? Who holds you accountable? And he's like, well, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, well, my sons are on staff and they hold me. But that's a different power dynamic. That's not yeah. a power dynamic of true accountability if they're related to you. And so I think Sean McVay as a coach, I think we forget sometimes how young and inexperienced relatively he is in terms of staff building. And I'm not saying that as like he doesn't know what he's doing. I'm saying he's figuring out what the right things are for him. And at some point, I think that includes developing and promoting internal candidates and particularly more so as teams continue to try to raid his staff and certain guys, and I'm thinking of Aubrey Pleasant specifically, certain guys understand and start to see like, wow, I've been passed over twice now and wasn't even interviewed for this defensive coordinator job. So
right.
maybe I should go somewhere else because I can't put my own growth on hold. Well, instead, I think the development there is holding more of those sort of extensive opportunities and more of that upper level promotion for people who do have that potential and do have that growth potential.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me, Jordan. And the Pete Carroll thing, I'm not going to go too far down that wormhole, but I mean, people who live in Southern California remember his days at USC, obviously, and he almost saw the parallels. It's almost eerie how when he started at USC, he had this staff of guys who really went out and got the best of the best. He had Norm Chow as his offensive coordinator who had been a successful coordinator at BYU for a couple decades. He got a guy like Ed Ogeron, who was one of the best defensive line coaches. He really brought in like the best of the best. And slowly that started to slip over time where, you know, some of these guys got poached and went to other jobs. And it seemed like Pete kind of surrounded himself with these a lot younger kind of guys who he was able to bring along. Like it was very much the Pete Carroll, you know, top down coaching staff rather than a staff of kind of, you know, equals or coaches who were very experienced and had success on their own. I don't think that favored Pete Carroll very well as his time at USC advanced. And I don't know whether that same thing is happening in Seattle, but when I read those stories that you're talking about, Mike Sean Dugar and just fantastic coverage, by the way. But when I read some of these, the parallels to me kind of come back and I'm going, wow, I wonder if Pete's doing this again. And I think about that in the context of Sean McVay, because I think there is, it's a very, like you said, Jordan, it's a very delicate balance that you have to keep. When Sean got hired in 2017, he was just about to turn 31 years old. I mean, he did not have...
Nobody told me that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, a couple of people wrote stories about it. Yeah, it kind of went ignored. He'd been on that Washington staff for a couple of years. He didn't have a tree of coaches. He didn't have a deep. So what did he do? He went out and, his first move was to hire Wade Phillips. He brings in Aaron Cromer. He keeps Skip Pete. He keeps John Fossil. He hires Joe Barry. He hires Bill Johnson, who we just talked about. He went out and hired these guys because he was new. He didn't have that experience. He hadn't worked on a lot of staffs before. I think what you're seeing now in the last couple of years, and the big move last year was getting rid of Wade Phillips, or parting, whatever the language was there. I don't even remember what the language there was, but that you saw Sean starting to assert himself a little bit more in terms of, now I've been a coach in this league for 3 years. I know more. I've learned more. I've evolved more as a coach. My needs as a head coach in terms of what I get from my assistants aren't the same as they were in 2017 when I was 31 years old. And I'm not saying that's good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying you've seen that transition start to happen to where now the kind of the inner circle is a lot younger and doesn't have quite that same level of experience. Thomas Brown is now your assistant head coach, which I know is a title, but it does mean something. I mean, it signifies the trust that Sean McVay has in Thomas Brown, and rightfully so, I believe. But you're seeing that kind of transition now to where Joe Barry had that job, and now it goes to a guy who's a lot younger in Thomas Brown. So the flip side of that now is he hired Raheem Morris, who is certainly a more experienced coach, who's been a head coach, who's been in a few different organizations. I think what the balance maybe, Jordan, that you're looking for is you want to do exactly what you're talking about. You want to bring those guys along. You want to have them have ownership in their jobs and feel like they can move up and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think you also want to have people in your coach's room who can, I don't want to say tell you no, but they can give you a different perspective. Mm-hmm. They've been around. They've been in other organizations. They've been a head coach. They've worked under a lot of different head coaches. I think you want a little bit of that in your room too. So have the Rams found the right balance here? I'm not sure. It seems like it. They're certainly skewing a little bit more toward the younger. There's no doubt about that. But having a guy like Raheem Morris in there, even a special teams coach now like Joe DeCamillis, these guys have been around. So I just find that fascinating. And I think having that balance is really, really important.
Well, and a few things I really like as well is that there seems to be, even though some of it is external search based, there does seem to be now along this staff and among these coaches, they actually had to work to retain Jonathan Cooley, who was going to be interviewing with another team. And also a college team for a position that would have been essentially a promotion, obviously, but it's a college team. And so, you're keeping a guy who, as a defensive quality control assistant working with Brandon Staley, helped install a defense virtually, essentially. And so you're seeing that, hey, I'm going to try to keep this guy around because I want him to move up and to promote and to help with to foster and encourage that internal growth. At the same time, hiring a couple of young guys outside of the system, Marcus Dixon being one of them. And I say young, but it's more like relative to, the coaching experience, and then Dwayne Stukes, right, who, both of those guys are former players. Both of those guys have been working their way around various coaching positions, trying to find, the right fit. And it's, I think that those things are also important because I like a balance, like what you said. I like a balance of having someone as experienced as Raheem Morris, and then also having guys who have different experience of their own, not only belonging to a different generation of coach, but also of player. Marcus Dixon and Dwayne Stokes both being former NFL players. Mm-hmm. And so I think that those things are important. That's a dynamic that I did not really, you don't really see maybe last year. You saw it a little bit on the offensive side with Kevin O'Connell. And, you know, I think that building and blending all of these this variety of experiential dynamics and then internal, external, and then, you know, there's always that line to walk on who you can and want to go to bat to keep and who you promote and who you help develop and who you invest in as a person. And so this kind of brings me back to the Kromer situation, because this, you know, this, it's certainly not a knock on Aaron Kromer and Zach Kromer that they were working together in this space. It is not, I'm not knocking them, but I am saying that it's very possible and probable that that people who were in charge of making these decisions decided that that's not the dynamic that they wanted. They wanted a different dynamic. They right. wanted sort of a variety of experiences and opinions instead of sort of one unilateral decision-making tandem, right? So I think that's all such an interesting sort of sociological experiment behind those doors up in Thousand Oaks, where you just it's a lot about coaching is so much about managing personalities and managing people and investing in people. And I think Sean McVay is sort of learning in public, right? Like he's right. got the very unenviable job of learning in public, right? When he makes mistakes, and we'll get to this in a minute, when he spoke about Jared Goff for the first time publicly, sort of admitting to mistakes in public, learning in public, and either succeeding or failing in public and finding that balance of things. And to me, that's the most fascinating part about coaching. Is doing that, and also the most unenviable part is having to do that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, let's jump into that real quick. But just to set the table, you know, we've been doing these podcasts every 2 weeks since the end of the season. We're going to be back here every week for the next couple weeks here as we get into some of these free agencies. So we'll be back with you next week and the week after that. So we'll dig very deeper. Exciting. I know people have a lot of questions, like about the franchise tag and things like that, who might be re-signed. I would refer them, first of all, again, back to your mailbag, which is now live on the Athletic app and website, answers a lot of those questions about what the Rams might do, what their options are, things like that. But just to give people a real kind of top-down view of what's going on here, we're going to see these things slowly start to develop. You're going to see that franchise tag window open to where teams can apply that tag. We don't even know the values yet right now, so it's a little premature to kind of guess what might happen there. But that window will open up, and then, as Jordan said, we'll get that free agency negotiation period window opening up, and then on March 17th will actually be the day that teams can sign players, and that's the official start of the new league year, which... Something else will happen that day, Jordan, which is that the the much talked about but not so much talked about trade between the Rams and the Detroit Lions, which will swap Jared Goff for Matthew Stafford, will become official. Now, Jordan, Sean McVay did speak to you beat reporters about... ostensibly about the coaching changes. Nobody is naive enough to think that he's not going to get questions about Jared Goff, but he did his best to avoid those, I guess you would say. I don't think, just my personal opinion, and then I certainly want to hear your insights. I don't necessarily think he served himself well with that. These questions are not going to go away. I know he probably really doesn't want to talk about them. He really doesn't want to talk about what happened. But, you know, brushing aside the questions is not going to make them go away. And I know they will circle back again on March 17th or whenever it is that the next media availability is after that. But Jordan, did you learn anything from that as it pertains? Now, he could not speak at all about Matthew Stafford, so let's be clear about that, because, well, I guess he chose not to speak to the beat reporters about Matthew Stafford. let's put it that way. But did you learn anything about the way that went down, or what did you hope to hear during that talk?
Well, I learned nothing, but I will say that I think that he did some good sort of self public relations in a way. And again, that has kind of a negative connotation, but I don't mean it that way. It's kind of like, you know, he knew he was going to get asked about it. He got a couple of questions to lead off, and then I got called on and I asked him about why and what changed in his assessment of Jared Goff between the time of awarding him the massive contract and this last offseason, in which they very, very adamantly were wanting to move on from Jared, to the point, I'll remind you guys, to the point where they were okay with having John Walford be their starting quarterback after a quarterback competition in 2021, if they couldn't go out and find a quarterback this offseason. Right. So that's a massive change. And so I asked Sean directly about that, and he deferred. He was polite about it, and he said, you know what, it's a really tough thing to answer. And what I think is important is to make sure that I mention the good things and the great leadership that he had provided. He listed Jared Goff's numerous accomplishments, and then he also mentioned that he'd rather focus on the good things and the good times, and really said he respected how Jared handled himself. And then, you know, thankfully, a couple of other reporters also followed up later on down the Zoom availability on that sort of line of questioning. And Sean pretty much repeated sort of the same thing as wanting to focus on the good things. I guess I did learn one thing. They have talked. He and Jared Goff have talked since the end of the season, and they have talked since the trade agreement happened. And so Sean did say that, and that he wants to keep those conversations private, but they had a lot of them, and that they that he thought they were healthy conversations. And then sort of, again, brought it back to reiterating, you know, I want to focus on what he was able to accomplish here and wishing him the best. And then also reiterating, like, look, guys, it's not all the quarterback's fault. And here's where I think we definitely can differentiate, because no, it's never all the quarterback's fault. And there's play calling and different various things with the offense and all of that. But the Rams felt that they were one player away from making a deep playoff run, if not reaching for the Super Bowl, and that player was quarterback. So no, it's not all the quarterback's fault. And I think any logical fan understands that very well. And any logical writer or media person understands that very well. But that doesn't mean that the Rams didn't make it extremely clear that they felt that they were a quarterback away from being more in contention of a deeper playoff run. So, you know, I think that I understand wanting to kind of put out some good quotes and to make that the latest on the cycle of this conversation after Jared had spoken to the Los Angeles Times about not feeling wanted in LA. You know, but I also, you know, the facts of the situation are in this brutal, brutal business and this brutal, brutal game, the Rams felt like they needed to improve their quarterback situation. And so they went out and did it. And one thing that Sean McVay mentioned at the end of his press conference that I thought was interesting is that he felt he could have communicated better throughout the experience. Now, it was not clear which experience he was referring to, whether it was Jared's playing career, communicating better in that regard. Mm-hmm. And in that way, it would mean communicating expectations better or communicating throughout the trade process with him a little bit better. So it was what it was. I don't think I expected anything groundbreaking in that regard. But March 17th, I hope we can follow up for sure.
Yeah, and this is where, like, I think Sean gets in his own way sometimes. And I don't think he's doing it to be malicious or anything like that. But you can do both. You can talk about the good times and talk about, you know, this is why we felt like we had to make the move. I almost feel like by keeping it remaining opaque about it, you're almost making Jared look worse, like by not just coming out and saying exactly what you're saying, which I think is the truth. Like, hey, you know, like we were at a certain level with Jared Goff as player, as coaches, as an offense, as a team. We were at a certain level. We felt like we needed to get to another level in order to win a Super Bowl. That's what we felt we needed to do is to refresh that or change that or whatever. And it doesn't necessarily reflect negative on Jared. You know, maybe it's just as much my fault as a coach as it is Jared's fault. But this is what we felt we needed to do in order to accomplish what we all want to accomplish, which is winning a Super Bowl. Like, I think there's a way to say that and to not just kind of, you know, turn it off and be like, oh, yeah, we're only going to talk about the happy things. Like, mm-hmm. well, like that's nice. Like, that's a nice sentiment. And I'm not saying he doesn't mean that. And I know it is a nice sentiment to look back and be appreciative of somebody who you worked with and somebody who helped get you to a certain height. But it doesn't answer the question. It doesn't solve the issue. So anyway, I know more will come and this will get discussed more and hopefully it gets discussed in more full ways, I guess you could say, because I think there's something else there and I think there's a way for Sean to address it in a more complete way that answers some of these questions. So I hope that happens. But Jordan, before we wrap, I want to make sure everybody also checks out your great feature on Reggie Scott. And maybe we can talk about this a little bit more next time, too. But, you know, we spent a lot of time here talking about coaches coming in, going out, you know, who's ideal or whatever. But if you really want to get an understanding of what happens in that Rams facility, and kind of the heartbeat of what happens there and what happens, go read Jordan's feature on Reggie Scott, because it's somebody who you may or may not know. You've probably heard the name because he's been around for quite a while. You hear Sean talk about him quite a bit as being somebody who's very important to the success of the team. But I don't think a lot of people really understand how deep that goes. So I'd really encourage people to go take a look at that. And really, if you really want to get a deeper understanding kind of the culture of what the Rams are trying to establish, I think it's an awesome look.
Yeah. Reggie Scott's just, first of all, what an incredible person. And second of all, his medical expertise and also his just ability to connect with people on a human level, not only got the Rams through what this was characterized by many people as the toughest year of their careers, but also, you know, consistently for years and years and years has been the person that players and coaches trust the most in the building, and someone who has built a space that is where people feel seen and they feel like they matter. And that is not usually the way that a training room operates. Right. Those are usually places actually of some, in some cases, mistrust. And I remember players in previous stops who did not want to share their medical records with the team physician or different things like that. But this is a place of utmost trust and vulnerability, and that bridge between physical vulnerability of football players, connecting that known facet of their lives to maybe a little bit less of an explored facet of emotional vulnerability. And that's where Reggie Scott meets them. So yeah, go check that out. You know, we're going to be back next week, you guys. There's a lot coming. Free agency, that's going to be really fun to talk about. You know, I think the Rams have a couple of fun things, you know, that they're maybe able to do there. And we're going to obviously cover all of that. And then the draft, and we're going to get you guys ready for the 2021 draft, starting in the second round for this foreseeable future. And always go check out the Rams page at The Athletic NFL for your Rams coverage. And we have great writers across the board who are bringing you all the updates you need to know across the league on a daily basis. So really appreciate you guys listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.